We'll call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. The hour of 10:15 having arrived. Members, we do not have a quorum yet, but when we do, we'll officially call the meeting to order, and then we'll have the minutes moved by someone. I'd also like to announce that it is Golf Industry Day on the Hill in 400 North, so if you do have some time, stop down to Golf Industry Day on the Hill. Usually I don't mention things such as this, but that is of extreme importance. Okay, so with that, it'd be my intention, members, we are very fortunate today to have Peter Larson, Dale Kirshner, Nan Madden, Nelson.
One of the sons.
Oops. Okay. Peter Nelson, and then Nan Madden, Jeff Van Wyken, and then Commissioner Bowerly. And we will, between presentations, have members, certainly they can ask whatever questions they'd like. So, with that, Mr. Nelson and Mr. Kirshner, welcome to the Tax Committee, and I will be interrupting as soon as we have a quorum to officially call the meeting to order, so I'll just ask you to pause for just a second. So, we have Mr. Nelson. Is Mr. Kirshner here? Why don't you join us down here?
You got that song in my head.
If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir, and make your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Peter Nelson, and I am the Vice President and Senior Policy Fellow for Center of the American Experiment. I'm pleased to be here today to talk about a recent study that we just published documenting the movement of people to and from Minnesota, and not only the movement of people to and from Minnesota, but the movement of income. And we're getting a PowerPoint slide set up right now, but I'd like to dig in and just talk about the data that we looked at and talk about that first. The IRS has been tracking migration of people and their income for quite some time. They started tracking the migration of people back in the 1970s from state to state. In the 80s, they improved that. They started tracking people's moves from county to county in the 80s. And in the 90s, they started tracking the movement of income. And so since the 90s, we've got a very good, reliable set of data tracking migration of people, households, and income. And this is based on every tax filer, basically every tax filer that files taxes. And what they do is they look at your tax filing in this period, and they compare your address to the prior period. And if your address changes, that's a change in address, that's a movement. And that's how they document everything. And so according to the IRS, these migration data may be the largest data set that tracks movement of both households and people from county to county, including family income. So this is very reliable. I want to note from the beginning that there's also now two very important updates that the IRS provided last year. The first update is the fact that we now actually have some data on who is actually moving to and from states. Prior to 2012, we just had aggregate data. We just knew that a certain amount of households, a certain amount of people were moving. Now we actually have some data on who was moving by their age and by their income. So that's the one improvement. The second improvement is the fact that the IRS now tracks a population movement by looking at the full year of tax returns. Prior to 2012, all of this migration data was based on a partial year, going from January to September. And one of the problems with that is the fact that from basically October to December, all those returns were not in that mix, and those end up being complex returns that tend to be filed by higher income earners. So it turns out we were actually under-reporting the movement of income around the country prior to 2012. Now we've got a full report on what's happening around the country. I want to note a couple.
Excuse me, Mr. Yep. Nelson, with that, we do have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Simonson moves the minutes of March 23rd. Before we vote on them, I'd like to make a correction here. It says began the meeting at 10:16. I would move to amend. It was 10:15. I've never started a meeting late. Is there any objection to the amendment? Hearing none, Representative Simonson moves the March 23rd minutes as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. That's for history's sake. It can never be said. That, okay. I do have an announcement to make also. Representative Simonson has been excused from next Tuesday's meeting, so we'll be holding the minutes from today's meeting over until the Wednesday meeting. Okay, so that being said, Mr. Nelson, please proceed.
Okay, so before digging into what the data show, there are three caveats that need to be addressed right from the start here. The first is, I already know that we have some new, that they changed their methodology starting with the 2012 data year. That limits the comparability to prior years. So moving forward, I'm going to be basically focused on the last three periods that have been reported. And those are also the three periods that have this income and age demographic data. And so that actually provides a lot of new information and a lot of new insights into what's happening. And another caveat that we need to be aware of is that this is just migration of tax filers. So this isn't a full picture of migration. It's just the people file taxes and their families. And the third caveat is that the 2014 data needs to be considered preliminary. And that's because the IRS posted this data publicly, and subsequently they did remove the data because they found some anomalies with the geographic coding for some areas. And I asked the IRS whether there was going to be any substantial changes to the Minnesota data set. They told me there should not be substantial changes to Minnesota's data, so I feel very comfortable moving forward and looking at this data and presenting this data, and especially considering how important this data is to our current public policy discussions here at the Capitol. So with that, let's dig in here to what we found. So this first chart shows the net domestic migration of people to and from Minnesota. And the key factor here to see is that in 2002, Minnesota's net migration turned negative. We stopped attracting people to the state at that time. And this is very consistent with the demographic data that we see coming out of our state demographer's office. And so this is very consistent with the Census Bureau. And you'll note here again that there's a little different colored line. That represents the fact that there was a change in methodology. And when we see that change in methodology, we can see that it still is pretty comparable. These returns are still, the change in the population is still pretty comparable. However, that's just for population. When we look at income, it's not comparable. We see a dramatic change when they added those last 3 months of returns in. In fact, the net migration number grew by 45% when we look at that change. So that's why we're kind of looking at these just 3 years of data as we move forward. So let's look at the income changes. In the past three periods, the net income loss moving to other states grew from $490 million to nearly $1 billion. Now, I told you that we had some changes in the comparability of data, but even when you try to adjust for that change, this nearly $1 billion loss of income from Minnesota is just off the charts. There's just no comparable data point going back to 1997. I should note that we have been consistently losing income all the way back to 1997. So we know a little bit now about who is moving by age and by income. And this next chart, I want to highlight three items in this chart. And the first item is, and this is again very consistent with what we're hearing from the state demographer's office. And the first item is the fact that we're losing college age kids and we're not gaining enough of them back to replace that loss. And that is again very consistent with what the demographer says. The second fact that jumps out at you right here is the fact that the net loss in population comes primarily from working-age people in their prime earning years. People are in their 40s and 50s. This loss is not generally coming from people 65-plus moving into retirement. The third very important point here is the fact that this reflects the actual population loss, so it also reflects the movement of children that are the children of these migrants. And these children would otherwise be Minnesota's future workforce if they had not moved. And so So that's a good picture on who is moving by age. So let's look a little bit more at who is moving by income. When we look at who is moving by income, another fact jumps right out from this chart, and that is that the people on net who are losing tend to be very high-income people. They tend to be people who make over $100,000, and there's a large chunk who make over $200,000.
Mr. Chairman, are we waiting until the end of this before we ask questions?
Yes, Chair Hart. We'll let both of them testify, and then we'll open up for questions, if that's okay. Mr. Nelson. Yep.
So we're losing high-income earners. What this chart also shows is that we're actually gaining lower-income earners who are making below $25,000 a year. Thus, we're losing the people who pay taxes, and we're gaining the people who often depend on our public services. And I think this chart really shows a problem that we need to be concerned about, because this has serious implications for the future sustainability of the state budget moving forward if these trends were to continue. So we just looked at some population changes by age and income. This chart is a very simple explanation of the income change and who is responsible for the movement, the net loss of income that the state experienced in 2014. And what jumps out at you here is the fact that 72% of the income loss is from people who are under 65. It's from people who are actively participating in the workforce, not just retirees. And this actually really surprised me. Prior to seeing this data, I had presumed that while maybe a lot of the population movement might be from workers, the income movement was from retirees. And these data show that that's just not the case. Retirees absolutely do account for a portion of this movement, but we're seeing people in their prime earning years who are contributing to our economy moving away from Minnesota on net. This next slide gives us a look into how Minnesota compares to other states. This is from a table in the report, and this is the bottom half of the table. I couldn't include the full table that has the full 50 states in it. What I did include is the bottom 50 states that report the rate of income loss from top earners. These top earners are, of course, the people that are most impacted and most influenced by our taxes. They're the ones that pay the most taxes in the state. And what we see here is that Minnesota is among the least attractive states to top earners. When you look at the rate of movement of these top earners, we ranked 37th in 2012, we dropped to 46th in 2013, and we dropped to 47th in 2014. And this is where we start to see connections possibly to our tax policy. And when you look at this chart, one thing becomes clear, and that's the fact that higher tax states are at the bottom here. It's the higher tax states that are the least attractive to top earners. States like Connecticut, Vermont, Maryland, and Illinois, and New Jersey, and New York. We're in that mix. We have not avoided that mix. We are absolutely in that mix of states that's not attractive to these top earners. And there's also a chart in the report that maps this out. And the map is telling. It's when you look at the West Coast on the map, it shows that the West is a pretty attractive place to top earners. However, there's one state that stands out that's not attractive, and that's California. California is a net loser of top earners, and it's basically the one state out west that, in fact, is a net loser. Now, if we go looking out east, we see that most of the east is also a net loser. However, there's one net gainer out east. And that net gainer happens to be New Hampshire. New Hampshire has no state income tax. So the state that clearly has the lowest taxes on these top earners is actually attracting people. All right. There's my next slide. All right, the next slide is not coming up here. But the next slide would show you where Minnesotans are moving. I aggregated the movement of people and income over the past 10 years. And you should have that in your on a piece of paper in front of you, I hope. And what that shows is where the top states that are net gainers of population and income from Minnesota. And when you look at these top 10 states, we see that most of these states are lower tax states. States like Washington, Colorado, Arizona, Florida, these are all lower tax states, states like Texas. And that's where Minnesota is losing income to. And we're losing substantial income over that time period. Now, I didn't include this this chart in my PowerPoint here, but it is in the report. And the report also looks at the top 10 states where Minnesota gains income from. And when you look at who is contributing income to Minnesota, we see that it's higher tax states. So we're seeing these patterns of movement around the country, both to and from Minnesota, from high tax states to low tax states, people from moving from high tax states to low tax states, and we're also seeing national patterns as well. So, and what that really tells us is that taxes do matter. It's really some strong evidence that suggests that adds to the evidence, the empirical studies that are out there, the anecdotal studies that we hear out there, all the financial advisors that I've talked to confirm that this is actually happening, that people are reacting to our taxes. And it's certainly notable that Minnesota lost nearly $1 billion the first year that we had that new top-tier tax rate on top earners, that fourth-tier tax rate that went from 7.85% to 9.85%. That billion-dollar loss is unprecedented, and it is just 1 year of data, so we certainly need to have some more years show up to see, you know, where we're really heading as a state after that tax increase. But it's certainly worth noting in the first instance that that seems to have had a direct and immediate impact. I want to conclude by answering a couple objections that I've heard, and one of these objections is the idea that somehow it's not appropriate to use the data like I used it to show a change in the net migration of income. That it's not appropriate to look at the gains and losses from these data and then basically subtract the outflow from the inflow to come up with a net movement of income. And that puzzles me, because if you're going to make that objection, you're objecting to how the IRS uses the data, you're objecting to how the census uses this data, and you're objecting to how academics use these data. So when the IRS launched this data back in the early 90s, they actually wrote a paper. And in that paper, they used these data exactly the way I've used it. They looked at the data and they looked at the net loss of income from the Northeast and from other regions of the country. And so they used it the exact same way. And when you look at all these academic studies out there, they also use these data the same way. And it's very telling. The census actually uses these data to make their estimates year after year, their estimates of per capita income. They think this is very useful data for understanding those changes between the census, the decennial censuses. Another objection I've heard is that the IRS did not accurately measure the migration of income, because when someone moves from one state to another, the income they earned does not necessarily go with them. Now, this is true, that when people move to another state, their job doesn't usually pick up and move with them. So the income from that job doesn't move, but the person generating that income certainly does move. It's an interesting point. It's something to be aware of, but the fact of the matter is the people generating that income move from one state to another state. And when you look at how the IRS has used the data, the census uses the data, and other academics, this is very meaningful information to understand how that movement changes the base of income for each state. There's academic studies out there that demonstrate that when through these moves, per capita income does change as a result of this migration. And so I think it's a very reliable data set, and these are the two main objections I wanted to address. There's some other objections, but out of concern for time here, I think I will conclude my remarks with that.
Okay, so with that, Let's go to Mr. Kirshner first, and then we'll have members can ask questions to either gentleman. Mr. Kirshner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and present your findings.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me, everybody. I'm Dale Kirshner. I'm editor-in-chief of Twin Cities Business Magazine. It's a monthly magazine reaching about 30,000 people across the state every month. Even though it's called Twin Cities, we cover statewide. And we have other products. Hopefully you read our e-newsletters and come to some of our live events, too. But we have been looking at issues more socioeconomic in the last 5 years. We've looked at things like North Minneapolis and why aren't more businesses moving up there, and if we had more jobs up there, could that help with the achievement gap? We've looked at Minnesota's ranking number 2 as one of the worst states in the country for hiring post-9/11 vets. But we look at these issues from the perspective of what are some of the organizations out there that are doing something about them, like Xcel Energy and some of the other corporations that are doing a great job of hiring vets. And we also have looked at things like Crystal Sugar and what it did with regards to locking out its union. So we look at issues across the board, and about 2 years ago, well, about 2014, we had these editorial advisory board meetings where we bring in experts on different subjects, and it could be, okay, tell us what's going on in the world of accounting, or what's going on with wealth management, or what's going on with commercial real estate. And for some reason, every meeting, they were bringing up that people are moving out of Minnesota because of the tax situation. We weren't asking, but every meeting, they were bringing up that it was changing what was going on in their industries. And we kept hearing more and more about that over the course of 2 years. A year ago in January, I wrote an editor's note saying, let's catch up, dash, in Naples. And it was meant to be kind of a little bit humorous, because trying to find people in business circles around here in March is getting tougher. A lot of people are off somewhere where it's warm. But there's a business club down in Naples, as you probably have all heard of, where a lot of Minnesota business owners and leaders used to go down just for the winter. More of them have moved there. We now know of accounting firms that have had to open offices in Naples. We know of other firms that have had to open up there because their clients have domiciled down there. So we kept hearing anecdotal reports like that, and we decided, let's do a study. So we sent out a study to 400 wealth management CPAs, lawyers, financial planners, all of those types of people, and we asked them, what are you seeing with your clients? We chose 400 because, frankly, we couldn't afford to survey every single one of those companies. It would probably be thousands. But from that, we had 150 respond. And from that, they were able to tell us the information that you have in your handouts. There are slides there. What we were able to do was, and this is totally separate, by the way, from what Peter's research is about, even though it's interesting that we did these reports at the same time, we did them separately. And we were able to find out from these firms that they have quite a few of their clients that are moving or have already moved within the last 2 years. And they're taking with them a considerable amount of net worth, taxable income, and gross estate value. The first few slides tell you a little bit more specifically about the, you know, how we went about some of the math and how we averaged everything up. We used interpolative medians to analyze this, which there are ways to do averages or medians, and the medians are more conservative. So we took the more conservative approach. And we found that since 2014, about $2.1 billion in taxable income has left or started to leave Minnesota, $16.7 billion in net worth and $31 billion worth of gross estate value from these firms that responded. We were also able to ask them why. What are your clients telling you? Is it because of the climate? Is it because they want to be closer to friends and family? Is it that they want to take advantage of a job opportunity? Or is it related to tax? And if it is tax, is it personal income, estate tax? You know, what is it? And we also asked, could it have to do with the Department of Revenue's approach at auditing people and questioning people, which we hear a lot about anecdotally. The top three reasons why people are leaving or started to leave were because of the estate tax, the personal income tax, and the Department of Revenue's tactics. Climate and outdoor activities came in fourth. And then we also asked, from that, we did our math and figured, okay, that's 72% of the people that are moving or started to move that are doing so for tax reasons. So that leads to $1.5 billion in taxable income leaving because of tax policy, $12 billion in net worth leaving because of tax policy, and $22 billion in gross estate value leaving because of tax policy. We also asked these firms, what of your clients do you anticipate will be here 5 years from now? And how many of them do you think will be moving? From that, we were able to say that there'll be about $5.2 billion in taxable income leaving Minnesota within the next 5 years. We estimate that's $1 billion in annual state tax income revenue that will be leaving based on the amount of tax revenue that comes from these individuals. So we looked at 5 years out, $122 billion in gross estate value that's expected to leave Minnesota within the next 5 years. And for us at the magazine, we see this as not just tax revenues for the state, which is very important, but we know that these individuals also contribute to our charities. They're our brain trust. They are the individuals who are on our boards of directors. They are the ones who mentor our leaders of tomorrow. They are the ones who built companies and, in many cases, are still running companies but doing so today remotely and flying back here on a regular basis to do what they need to do, but they telecommute the rest of the time. So it's similar to what Peter's data found, and it's fantastic you have the age information that you do, because through anecdotal reports and a lot of people who made comments on these surveys, we hear the same thing, that these are not retirees. They're people in their 50s, and for state reasons, they choose to be doing what they're doing now. The Minnesota Society of CPAs did a similar study. They used our questionnaire. They put together a SurveyMonkey survey, and they surveyed 1,700 of their members. 115 of them, 114, responded. And from that, they found that since 2014, about 3,000 people either moved or began moving, taking with them $1.3 billion in total median taxable income, $9.8 billion in total median net worth, and $17 billion in median gross estate value. Those are lower dollar amounts than what our study found, in large part because we also studied wealth managers and other types of firms, not just CPAs. I think we went out to about 20% of our universe as CPAs. We also talked to 17 wealthy individuals. These are CEOs or founders of companies whose names you would recognize. We polled them. They provided us very interesting comments. These 17 people alone left Minnesota or are leaving with $25 million in total taxable income and $600 million in total net worth. So we tried to kind of come at it three different ways, and each of these studies or approaches found similar things. There was no big diversion here. Fourth, adding to it, was what Center for the American Experiment found as well. So I think it's the impact that we're most concerned about. Also, venture capital. In the past, we were a great state for venture capital and seed stage investments. These individuals, where they're going, they are backing companies down there now. They are getting involved in their charities. They are dropping out of doing charities here, in part because they're afraid of the Department of Revenue, even though that's not one of the 26 factors. But we were hearing that from charities, which is also in our story. So it's something that we thought deserved closer study, which we did. And there are some reader responses in these packets. I'm not going to read them verbatim, but people are responding to the report that we did. And, these are, once again, business owners, and they're telling us that they're moving where they move. They have 230 jobs. They have 600 jobs. They're not moving these jobs out of the state of Minnesota yet, but they are definitely moving themselves and their families. And that is all I have. So thank you.
Thank you. I have a list here, Representative Lesh, Carlson, and Earhart. Chair Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nelson, If higher taxes drive these Minnesotans away, is it true that lower taxes will tend to bring people in too?
Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair.
Nelson, sorry.
Representative Lesh. That is what the data suggests. When I told you that I've got a chart in there that shows that Minnesota on net tends to gain people from higher tax states. And when you look at the map that I've provided in my report, it shows that these lower tax states on net are much more attractive to top earning individuals. And these are the people, of course, that are most impacted by high taxes. And so if low tax states are attracting these people at much higher rates than low tax states are attracting these people more than the high tax states, that's highly suggestive. And it's very consistent with a lot of the empirical research out there that shows that taxes matter.
Well, Mr. Chair, so help me understand when you talk about the data. I'm looking at Table 2 right now on page 8, where it breaks down the adjusted gross income in over those tax years, and then AGI out. Does the left column there, those numbers, those are indicating the net AGI gain? Is that true?
Mr. Nelson.
So in Table 2, the right column there shows the net gain or loss of income to the state of Minnesota.
Okay.
And we see back in the early 90s, we were somewhat gaining in a couple years there. But since 1997, we have been losing on net substantial amounts of income due to migration.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nelson, what I'm trying to figure out is I'm looking at the left column, the AGI in, the people that we attract. And I see in mid to high two billions in the 90s, and then we get to 2002 and 2003, and it kind of drops. Can you recall, Mr. Nelson, what we did with tax policy the year prior in 2001?
Mr. Nelson.
We reduced taxes, I believe, in 1998. We passed a law, I think it was 1998. We passed a law where between 1999 and 2000. Maybe, I might be getting this a little wrong. Maybe it was 2000, 2001. But we reduced taxes on most earners by about, what was it, 0.85%, I think. And that was a two-year reduction. So we did reduce taxes in that time.
Chair Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, I got a report here with me that was done by Dr. Wilson back in 2009, Tax Cuts and Rebates, the Fiscal Impact of 5 Years of Tax Cuts. And so there were permanent tax cuts that we enacted in those years. Is that right?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, yes, those were permanent tax cuts, absolutely.
Okay. So how do you explain then when we've got an AGI in the mid to high $2 billions, and then immediately after we enacted those permanent tax cuts, the AGI in plummeted to the tune of about half a billion. How does that square with your numbers that you present in your report?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, that also happens to be a time where we were emerging from a recession. And as we saw during the past recession, movement dropped both to and from due to the economy. And I think that can be part of that explanation. And so that would be my response to your question.
Chair Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's what I'm having a tough time with, because if your suggestion is that lowering taxes would help generate a net draw of high income earners, but the numbers that you present suggest exactly the opposite. I'm having a tough time seeing how your study, based upon your own reasoning, confirms that lower taxes will help get more rich people here, because it looks like they took off. Looks like they got their money. Makes me think of another Steve Miller song, Take the Money and Run. were singing Steve Miller earlier.
The boys are back.
Their boys are back down. Looks like they took the money and ran. And I don't know where they went, if they went to Florida, Arizona, or wherever, but the money that we gave them with the expectation that they'd reinvest, it appears that didn't happen either, because the other thing I remember in the wake of those tax cuts, and the first 8 years I served here were under Governor Tim Pawlenty, and I recall his recurring lamentation of us bleeding manufacturing jobs. Between 2001 and 2010, manufacturing jobs in Minnesota, they decreased 396,000 in 2001 to 288,300 in 2010. So those tax cuts didn't spur any growth. In fact, not only did they not spur growth, but we lost a lot of jobs. So I can't figure out how the numbers that you're presenting square with our experience here in Minnesota. Now, the $1 billion that you say that we lost based on your numbers, I remember I first came in 2003, which is why I remember this, okay, and in the wake of that, $5.4 billion deficit that we had straight away, 1.7 of it was in that year, and the rest of it was in the out year. The total value of surpluses from 1997 to 2001 was $13.2 billion. Of that amount, $7 billion went to tax cuts and rebates. $7 billion. So pretty sizable difference from just the $1 billion that you're suggesting spurs out migration. And yet immediately after that, we had a drop in folks coming in. Now the other thing, I pulled out this piece from the newspaper when I got elected, Mr. Chair. The amount of that that went to the amount of the surplus that went to K-12 Education, Health and Human Services and Children and Family Services was only $1.8 billion. Now 2003 was also the same year that we cut $1 billion out of Health and Human Services. And the third statistic on here, Mr. Chair, was the amount that a St. Cloud bakery charges for a pail of scraps that hunters use for bear bait was $3. This is just by the numbers thing. I just thought I had to add that in there. But I wonder if the out-migration that we're seeing is certainly more of a result of the high quality of life and education that we offer people in Minnesota that we cut way back on during those years. That's what we're known for in Minnesota. That's our niche. And as any business owner knows, you go with your niche. We're not going to compete with Alabama for a person that can turn a nut faster on a boat. We're just not going to. We're not going to compete with China either. But in reality, aside from the rhetoric that I used there, Mr. Nelson, I'm kind of wondering, the numbers don't jibe that I'm seeing. And if you're saying, well, you see, it was an economic change, well, yeah. There's always going to be economic changes, of course. I mean, we're seeing that on the Iron Range now. There are huge economic forces, international market forces, that it's really difficult to fight against. So how is it that you're suggesting that despite all other factors, economic or otherwise, your numbers make sense?
Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, I will note that we have been consistently losing income going back to 1997, substantial income. And throughout that entire time period, Minnesota has been a relatively high tax state compared to other states. The drop in our tax rates that happened in 1999 and 2000 didn't change our relative standing amongst the states that much. But we were still a high tax state. And I think that's part of the reason why we didn't see much change. We just dropped from 8.5% to the top rate to 7.85%. And it was an improvement, but when you relative to other states, it appears that it wasn't enough. We still continued to lose income, and we still continue to be a relatively high tax state. So I think that there's other ways that we can look at structuring our tax policy that make us a friendlier state to top earners and to lower rates and to just do the standard tax policies that any economist will tell you are appropriate for a state, which is to lower those rates and broaden the base. And as an organization, we've suggested some ways to do that, and I think those are appropriate tax policies that can make us more attractive to those top earners. But let's be clear here. We've been losing income to other states since 1997. And picking out the fact that, you know, somehow this doesn't just jive with some tax changes we did in 99 and 2000 does not detract from the fact that we're not an attractive state. The one thing we know from this data is that we are not an attractive state relative to other states to top earners.
Mr. Nelson, how much is attributed from 2008-2009 to 2009-2010 with the fact that the markets on average decreased 54%? Mm-hmm. Does that affect that, Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chair, are you talking about the drop in the income that we lost?
On the AGIN, 2.2 to 1.8.
That's, I think, very consistent with just the drop in migration. And okay. That there are people just stopped moving in 2008, yep. And in many respects.
Okay. Members, since I am, my middle name is Fox News Fair and Balanced, I timed how much time the two gentlemen had to testify, a half hour. So I do want to get a half hour, and we are very fortunate today to also have the commissioner here. Chair Lesh still has the floor, but I've got a whole list of folks here, so and I don't want to cut off debate. We may have to go a little bit longer, but I do want to get the testimony in today, and we can have questions. I know some of you have to go at some point here. Chair Lesh.
I would just close, Mr. Chair, by saying that, you know, I appreciate talking about trying to get rich people. That's great. I like rich people as much as anyone. I do. But I think one of the things we need to look at in being attractive is not just being attractive to rich people. We need to be attractive to the people that build the wealth in our state, and that's through an outstanding education system. We're ranked as the top state for business because of the quality of life. And when you guys look at tax rates, you just look at the tax rates you care about. When you say we're the worst state in the nation or seventh worst, you're only looking at the taxes that affect rich people, not the taxes overall that put us about in the middle of the pack. And I think that just needs to be brought up, that there are other benefits that folks have here in the state of Minnesota that come with those taxes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lesh. Chair Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll try to be brief. I had several questions, but I got the signal that you want to go to other testimony. But I do want to point out a couple of things, and then if time allows, maybe if you could recognize me again. But this morning's Tribune, I don't normally bring newspapers into the, even yours, into the hearing, but the seven-county metropolitan population hits 3 million. And it was kind of an interesting article, but the part that I wanted to point out and what triggered me going out and bringing it back in was where you show the working-age taxpayers account for the largest share, and then 72% under 65. And in here, they part of the article says the question of how seriously to take the net outflow to the Twin Cities is a tricky situation, to kind of paraphrase it. But then this is the Census Bureau that's going to come out with a report, and they did an early briefing, apparently. But it says, we've looked at this in detail at the state level and found that most of the losses are among young people, those in their late teens and early 20s, and a large share of these young people are moving out of state to go to school. The pattern may look different in the metro area and so on, but what I'm picking up on is, you know, your comment when you were on that chart was that prime earning years. And here they're talking about the big outflow is people that are in their learning years, if you will, or just beginning their careers. And I would argue not in their prime earning years yet. So that was just one thing I want to point out, and I would suggest people read the article. The question that I would like to pose, however, and then I'll skip over what some of the other things I had, one other comment. I had a friend that moved to Florida, and he wrote me a letter after he moved and said, you know, the one thing I didn't calculate were the property taxes down here. And so my point is you have to really look at all taxes. And my question then would be, and you implied you had suggestions on other approaches, and so what other taxes would you raise then when you talked about restructuring to offset the income tax losses? And one of my concerns has always been that we not go in the direction as much as possible of regressive taxes. And by your comment, I'm assuming that you would be probably proposing what at least I would define as some regressive taxes. So if you could comment on both of those points, the article, if you happen to see it, or at least what I read of it, and also tax philosophy relative to progressive versus regressive. And then my final comment, Mr. Chairman, I've been here 44 years. This debate doesn't go back to the mid-90s. It goes back to probably my first term, because we started the Minnesota Miracle, which was huge tax changes. And the debate has gone on all those years, and I think we would have turned out the lights long ago if the doomsayers had prevailed. There wouldn't be anybody left. But I'll stop there, and if they could respond to those two points.
Mr. Nelson and Mr. Kirshner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, that census data reflects what we've been seeing, what our state demographer has been telling us as well. And one important thing to note, as I started this presentation, is that I'm only talking about the migration of tax filers. A lot of these college students don't file taxes. So the data that I presented does miss a lot of these college-aged kids that are leaving Minnesota. The census data does not miss that. It shows that these kids are leaving Minnesota, and we're not gaining enough of them back. And so that is a substantial issue that we need to address. And that is a substantial issue related to our workforce. And the demographer has highlighted this issue about our workforce and how this net migration loss is impacting our workforce. And when you look at just the past 10 years of employment growth in Minnesota, we lag the country. Employment is not keeping up. Employment growth is not keeping up with the rest of the nation. And I think part of this demographic patterns that we're seeing here reflect that. We're not growing like other states are. But what we see is that these lower tax states are growing. To address your issue about how you reduce these tax rates, if you don't want to do a regressive tax, if you don't want to move into regressive territory, one thing you can do is broaden the base. And to do that, you can start paring away a lot of these deductions and other sorts of exclusions that are in the tax code. And you can do away with a lot of those. And if you just wanted to focus on top earners, you could just focus on top earners and reduce the deductions and exclusions they get and lower their rate. That's one option for you. Another issue with our tax policy is the estate tax. We heard from Dale that the estate tax is a big part of the problem. The estate tax doesn't raise a substantial amount of money for Minnesota. It's not chump change, but eliminating that estate tax is, in my mind, the easiest way for us to step forward with some sound tax policy that will keep us an attractive place for wealthier people so they stay in Minnesota and continue contributing to our communities.
I have some other questions, Mr. Chairman, but as I indicated earlier, I'll stop.
I think what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to go to Earhart, Knobloch, Anderson. I got a whole longer list than that, but let's go with that. And I know you gentlemen have to leave, and I do want to get Ms. Madden and Mr. Van Wyken up at the table here, too. So, Chair Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You see, the IRS has been tracking this for years, and that's where you got most of your data from. Did I hear that correctly? Nobody else has been able to get that data over the years, because I've been asking management budget for a number of years to do where we're going with the current tax situation. And I've asked them to do the study, but you're telling me that's already available and they just got to go and look at it, or what?
Mr.
Chair, Representative Earhart, yes, the data is now available. And this is new for 2015, the fact that we can now track the movement of people income by age and by income. So that is brand new for 2015. That did not exist prior to then.
Chair Earhart?
Mr. Chairman, on page 28, I guess it is, of the business study, it says something about so-and-so billions leaving, the same individuals have $17 billion in median net worth and $31 billion in median gross estate value. Does that mean that all of those people have What does that mean? That each one of those with the median net worth is $17 billion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, that's the total. So it's adding up all the people and those dollar amounts that they have.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, you've kind of just done away with demographics here. The boomers are retiring and they're bugging out of here from one another. And you just ignored that, kind of, I think, in your talks here, both of you guys did. And I think that is a factor. And also, I know from talking to my neighbors that some of them are going to go out of here for 10 years and then they'll come back here for the good health care benefits and to die and be with their families, you know, but right now they're heading out. So maybe we should institute a penalty tax when they move back then to make up for what they didn't pay when they live here.
And I would just say, members, that on page 2, that lefter began leaving Minnesota, those big numbers, I'm not included. I did not fill out the survey, just so that's clear. Let's go to Knobloch, Anderson, and I got a whole list, and I don't want to cut anybody off, but we do need to get Ms. Madden Van Wyken and the commissioner on the record. Then after that, we will have all the questions we can have, and we can talk about this. This will be an ongoing discussion. So, Chair Knobloch.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'll try to make it quick. First of all, as you look at this chart and try to make sense of it, there are, of course, many reasons that people come and go to Minnesota. But in regard to tax rates, I would tell people it's my sense that there's a lag of a number of years between when we change our tax rates and when you actually see behavior. I mean, if you think about it, if we change our taxes this year, I mean, if we pass a tax bill this year, it's not going to take effect until next year. The people who pay the change in taxes next year are likely not going to pay the change in tax until the following year when they file their tax returns. At that point, they're going to say, oh my, my taxes went up. They see the effect of the tax return, and if they're high-income individuals and they're looking at moving, it takes time to find a new job, it takes time to sell your business, it takes time to sell your house and relocate to another state. So I don't think it's unreasonable to assume there's a lag of 4 or 5 years in between the time, or 3 years anyway, between the time that we change a tax policy and then see the effect of it. And so I think that maybe fits a little bit more with the graph that's been talked about. And as we look at tax policy changes up and down, we've got to keep in mind that there's this lag. In regard to the witness that talked about Naples, Florida, I'll tell you that there are many clubs in many states around the country. I know that the first Saturday in March in Phoenix, Arizona, is St. Cloud Days, where there is someone from St. Cloud responsible for renting a large room at a hotel or other place, and there are typically many people from St. Cloud, sometimes hundreds of people, just in Phoenix, Arizona, just from St. Cloud Days, that are attending St. Cloud Days. And so this is something that we see across the country. And, of course, people, again, as Representative Earhart mentioned, do move for a variety of reasons, climate as well as tax policy. But I know anecdotally from, for example, one nonprofit board I serve on in St. Cloud, I know of one of our major donors that just in the last year, due to the tax changes that have taken effect, has decided to move to Florida or establish his residency in Florida. And I'm hopeful that he'll still be a significant donor to our nonprofit, but this sort of thing is, in fact, happening, members. Thank you.
So we could say that it has to do with climate change. Would be appropriate. Chair Anderson S., and then we're going to Ms. Madden Van Wyken, and I do have the list here. Everybody's still on it. Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when I look at this report and the studies that have been done on this issue, I am very alarmed about what this means for the health of our state. A couple of things that, you know, concern me is, you know, Minnesota's never been a low-tax state. We've never even been a middle-of-the-road tax state. We've always been in the top 10, and if we managed to get out of it for 2 years, it was still, we were number 14, if at best. So when we're talking about giving some tax relief, that's just one little reprieve. And I think what we're seeing here is people saying, I can't do this. I can't continue to go this way. And the technology is there today that people don't have to stay in Minnesota. They can do their business anywhere and still come back and enjoy the lakes for a brief time and then go back and live somewhere else. And so I think that we need to be smarter about what our tax policy is and what this means. And in particular, I think about my son on this issue. And I think about the talent that is leaving this state. When you look at 72% of these people being the workers that are leaving our state, those are the folks that are going to create the new jobs for his generation. And going forward, the innovation that we have. If we're losing these folks that are providing the startup funds for all the small businesses that we have, think about what we are missing out on as a state. I just don't think that we can continue to go that route. And what's at stake, as we mentioned here, we do have great schools here in Minnesota, but that's funded on the backs of the businesses that we have in the state. And without that talent here, those people starting their companies here and keeping them here, we are going to have to make some really challenging decisions. So I think most people are just asking to be middle of the road. They're not asking to be the low tax state. They're asking just to be in the middle so that we can be competitive. And I just ask that we all take a moment to consider that.
Thank you. And with that, I know that you have to go. So, Mr. Nelson and Mr. Kirshner, thank you very much. And like I said, this discussion will continue. We're very fortunate today. Thank you very much. We're fortunate today to have with us Ms. Nan Madden and Mr. Jeff Van Wyken. Welcome to the Tax Committee, and you will get as much time as the first group, and then questions, and then I am going to make sure that we get on the record here. Commissioner Bauer, if you'd like to make a few comments. And I would apologize for, we probably won't get to everybody in the list tonight, but I don't apologize for anything. Last time I apologized for something, I got in a whole lot of trouble. So I'm not going to apologize for anything, but we're not going to get everybody. Tough. Okay. With that, Ms. Madden, Mr. Van Wyken, welcome to the Tax Committee. We're very fortunate to have you with us today. Please, who would like to go first? I think Nan should go first.
I'll go first.
I mean, Ms. Madden. Okay. Ms. Madden, please present your estate, who you represent for the record, please, and we'll go from there.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to make some short remarks today. I'd really like to focus on the data that is used in the Center for the American Experiment report and make some distinctions between what that data says on the one hand and what are the assumptions and conclusions that are made in the report on the other. As Mr. Nelson said, the primary data used for their report is the IRS migration data, which includes income and demographic data about households whose mailing address in 1 year is in a different state than the year before. That's not exactly the same as demonstrating that people are moving, but it's close enough, and I'll use that language. So that is what the IRS data is. I want to underline a couple things about what the IRS data does and what it doesn't do. The IRS data measures the number of people moving from one state to another, and it tells you some demographic information about those households. It is not a measure of income moving from one state to another. It's not a measure of income flow, of bank accounts, moving money being transferred from one state to another. It's just a measure of people moving and information about those people. So it's also focused on people who move, so it does not measure a change of total income in the state, because Minnesotans who aren't moving in a particular year aren't part of this data. And it does not provide any information about the reasons that people move from one state to another. So just to talk a little bit more about this issue of income migration, the IRS data measures the movement of people. It does not measure movement of income. So we don't think it's accurate to take the total incomes of people who moved into Minnesota, compare that to the total incomes of people people who moved out and people who moved in, and describe the net difference as a loss of income from the state. That conclusion that there was a $944 million leaving the state is based on the assumption that when a person moves, all their income goes with them. I don't think that assumption holds up, and it really overstates the impact of migration patterns. When someone moves out of Minnesota to another state, the income they earned in Minnesota doesn't necessarily go with them. It may just stay here. So, for example, if someone leaves their job in Minnesota to go to another state, in most cases, that Minnesota-based job will likely still exist, and the corresponding salary will be earned by the next person who fills that job. Now, certainly there are circumstances when that is not the case. Say a large factory closes down, those jobs are lost, and you're not going to see the same kind of job replacement. But for the most part, if I have someone on my staff who leaves to go to another state, I don't eliminate their job. I hire someone else to take it. Similarly, if a small business owner moves, say we have a doctor in private practice, he retires and moves to Florida, his patients probably are still going to need to go to the doctor, and the payments they paid for his services will go to another Minnesota-based doctor, or he'll sell his practice to another doctor who will continue to operate it. So in these scenarios, even though a person has left Minnesota, much of the income they had been earning stays in Minnesota. It now just will be earned by someone else. Most likely that someone else will be a Minnesotan who hasn't moved in and out of the state in the past year, so their income is not included in the IRS migration data. So this IRS data does not measure income leaving the state. It's a measure of the number of people coming and going from Minnesota. I think it's also important to just take a look at this migration data and just look at the order of magnitude of what some of these numbers are to put these in perspective. There definitely is migration going on, but it's important to keep in mind what those numbers are. A second assumption made in this report is that a significant number of Minnesotans are leaving the state for tax reasons. Remember, the IRS data does not include information about why people move. And there's already been some discussion, and I think Mr. Van Wyken will discuss some of the questions about whether that correlation between migration patterns and tax policy is as strong as this report suggests. There certainly is a significant body of literature that finds that other factors, such as housing costs, job opportunities, being close to family, are more powerful in explaining migration patterns than tax levels. Certainly the finding that the greatest number of people moving in and out of the state are in their prime working age years is consistent with that literature that finds that job opportunities are a big driver. And there's also substantial academic research finding that when other states have raised taxes on high-income individuals, they did not see a dramatic change in migration patterns. I think it's important as we have this ongoing discussion about what kind of tax policy and what kind of budget decisions make our state strong, that we just really keep in mind that taxes are only one variable, and another important factor is the public investments that make Minnesota an attractive place to live and do business, and that's what our tax revenues pay for. The tax reform bill that we passed in 2013 was important in getting our state back on track fiscally and ending a cycle of frequent budget deficits, and it paid for investments in schools and other public services. In contrast, there are other states that are still struggling to recover from the recession and to make the investments, including in schools, that contribute to the economic success of their residents and the state as a whole. So, again, I really don't think we can separate the discussion about taxes from what those taxes pay for. I certainly would not say that no one ever moves for tax reasons. Certainly there are people that do. But when I look at the data and the evidence, I think we need to keep that issue in perspective and really try to understand that taxes are just one factor among many that influence people's decisions to move. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Mr. Van Wyken, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Van Wyken. I'm a fiscal policy fellow with the North Star Policy Institute.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the opportunity to testify on the Center's Income Migration Report. I concur with Ms. Madden regarding the measurement problems with the report, although my testimony will focus on the report's tendency to attribute the alleged income migration to Minnesota's tax climate. The report purports to show a $7.6 billion net income migration during the period from 1992 to 2014. Even if that finding were reliable, it is far from clear that that migration occurred as a result of taxes. Most of this migration occurred during the period from 2002 to 2013. During that period, state fiscal management could be fairly described as fiscally conservative. For example, real per capita state and local owned source revenue in Minnesota fell by 4%, and real per capita expenditures fell by 11%. In both instances, the rate of decline was double the national average. Only five states had a greater real per capita spending decline over this period. So, most of the income migration occurred while state finances were quite austere. As for the 2013 Tax Act causing the flight of working-age people from Minnesota, we should note that a close examination of the Revenue Department's incidence analysis of the 2013 Tax Act indicates that that act likely resulted in a tax reduction for a majority of middle-income Minnesotans. A net tax reduction should not be causing tax flight. The report makes much of the fact that income migration allegedly grew by $247 million from 2013 to 2014 and attributes that to the 2013 Tax Act. But in the year prior to that, before passage of the 2013 Tax Act, net income migration increased by nearly as much, $207 million. If we believe the report's data, there is a trend of growing income migration in recent years that does not coincide with changes in state tax policy, but which does coincide with the trend of an increasing number of baby boomers reaching retirement age. This conclusion is further supported by the fact that most of the income is migrating to warm weather states. For example, based on the report's own data, 10 times more income went to Florida than to South Dakota, even though South Dakota is closer and has a slightly lower state and local tax burden, according to the report. I would suggest that weather might have something to do with the huge disparity between these two states. Since passage of the 2013 Tax Act, Minnesota has surpassed adjacent states in terms of job growth, personal income growth, and GDP growth. These trends are a strong indicator that the 2013 Tax Act has not caused massive tax flight or income migration. Furthermore, since passage of the 2013 Tax Act, anticipated state tax revenue has exceeded the projections made at 2013 at the end of session by at least $500 million in each fiscal year. Again, it's hard to see how revenue collections could have consistently surpassed the 2013 expectations by such a comfortable margin if there had been such large-scale tax flight. In short, data internal to the report, as well as data from other sources, do not support the premise that the alleged tax flight was the result of Minnesota's tax climate in general or the 2013 Tax Act in particular. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Van Wyken. And I would, you know, you were kind of addressing the Center for the American Experiments, but how do you address what the Twin City Business report was? I mean, they're more specific into they did actual interviews with actual people.
I don't know if Ms. Mann has anything to weigh on this. I have not had the chance to look at that report. I was only made aware of it a few days ago. I would note, Ms. Madden may have more information on this, in the solicitation for this survey, it was clear that they were searching for people who left the state because of taxes. So they had a kind of pre-selected sample of people who left the state because of taxes, and they found that those people left the state because of taxes. It was not a scientific survey and not academically rigorous, so I think it was kind of pre-selected data that shows what they wanted it to show.
I think it's climate change. That's what it is. Of course, there's no scientific data behind that either. So, with that being said, Mr. Van Wyken, you used to do something else.
I'm sorry?
You used to do something else.
I used to do a lot of other things.
Like because
most
I
of them I don't like to talk about.
I'm getting old. I can't remember what it was. Were you like, you did something?
I did.
And you were pretty good at it, if I remember. You.
Thank
what
did
you do before? Why do I?
Well, saying
that?
I was good at it limits the field quite a bit. But, I was with the city of Minneapolis for 12 years. I was self-employed for 12 years. I was in the governor's office for 2 years.
Oh, what did you do there?
My title was the senior fiscal analyst, something like
that's
that.
That's where you were.
That's where I was.
That's where you were. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, with that, let's see here. Let's go to, thank you for your presentations.
Thank you.
It'd be my intention to go to some member questions here. And if members, if you have questions for Ms. Madden, Mr. Van Wyken, or comments from the other presentation, because they did have to get out of here, we'll take it either way. And then it'd be my intention at about 22 or so, I'd like to go to Commissioner Bowerly for some comments. So with that, I have Malene, Barrett, Dabney, Loon, Slocum, Draskowski, Petersburg. Representative Malene.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions were for the Center for the American Experiment, but I guess those two left. So,
would you like to make a comment on what you were thinking? Or?
No, you can just take me off the list.
Oh, okay. I was going to say I'm sorry, but I'm really not. So, okay, Vice Chair Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too had questions for the Mr. Nelson from the Center for American Experiment.
Okay, next.
Vice Chair Barrett. But there's so much good information after that that I developed other questions. To the point of young people leaving for education, I think someone had mentioned that earlier. I just want to put a plug in for maybe a couple of reasons why that may be. We have a university here, University of Minnesota, that is one of the largest, has the highest tuition rates of any Big Ten university. I think they're fourth or fifth. And also, they actually have a waiting list of resident students who want to get in but can't, but yet they don't have a waiting list for non-residents that are qualified. In both situations, highly qualified people wanting to get in. Minnesota kids can't, so they may move on, maybe Mankato State, like I went to school, or maybe like University of Wyoming, where my daughter went to school. So there are unfortunately other reasons or reasons why people leave than unfortunately we have in our state that we should change. But that's not something for our committee. I just wanted to mention that, though. So the question for Mr. Nelson, which I think Mr. Michael could answer, is to the extent that the large income earners are leaving our state, do we know whether that's due to small businesses? I mean, are these large income? Are they really just income producers and they have a high income because they own a business and therefore their small business might be leaving our state? If that's true, it brings up some other issues with maybe job loss.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barrett, we used to look at this IRS data. I haven't looked at it since they added some additional detail, but back when we were looking at it before, it basically just reports the number of filers and exemptions and that leave and the adjusted gross income, and you can't distinguish by the source of that adjusted gross income, so you couldn't see the extent to which it's from wage and salaries, interest and dividends, or from business income. And so I think using the IRS data would be very hard to infer how many of these taxpayers whose address changed are wage earners versus business owners.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Barrett.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Michael. Fair enough. So I was hoping that would support my next point, but I may not need it. In that, I grew up in a border community, Brandon, South Dakota. I moved to Mankato to go to college there. Viking fan, low tuition, went there, low-income family, Pell Grants, all that. So the first company that came into the Brandon Industrial Park, I believe, was Laverne Truck and Equipment. I don't go back too often, but it's a thriving business park made up of many companies from many different states. They are doing pretty well in Brandon, and the cornerstone was Laverne, Minnesota Truck and Equipment. I now represent a community that is a border community in which the former EDA director for Chisago County, Chris Eng, told me 17 of the 20 businesses in the Osceola, Wisconsin Industrial Park are former or current Minnesota companies who have expanded to Wisconsin. So to me, that's compelling visual evidence of two things happening, both of which aren't necessarily good, or obviously aren't good for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, am sorry that the Center for the American Experiment didn't stick around for the conversation. But I might actually be reinforcing one of Representative Barrett's initial point, because the I know I'm as surprised as you are. But the Center for the American Experiment started with saying, well, we've got an out-migration of 18 to something-year-olds, you know, college students, presumably. And so I thought, well, how does our tuition for in-state students compare nationally? Because these, by and large, aren't, these kids aren't migrating for tax purposes. The average 18-year-old is not hitting that high of an income, at least not a legal one, that they have to worry about the taxes they're paying. So I looked up in-state tuition, four-year public universities. Minnesota is significantly above the national average for tuition. Tuition for public two-year colleges, we're third highest in the country, well above the national average. And for private college, we are again amongst the highest in the country, well above the national average. It sounds like our higher ed policy over the 2000s and at least up until a few years ago when we froze tuition at the 2 and 4 year colleges was driving young people out of the state. If I can, in our some of the changes I know in our teacher licensure program drives young people out of the state, because I can now, under Minnesota law, if I get trained in another state, it's easier for me to get a license here. If I go to River Falls rather than St. Cloud, it's easier for me to get a teaching license. If I go to another, if I stay in Minnesota, it requires a 12-week student-teacher experience to get a license here. If I get trained out of state, I can do a five-day student-teacher experience and get licensed here. So we've got policies that are driving young people out of the state. Shifting gears, I wish the Center for the American Experiment had stayed, because they're, I think what we've got is a, and the higher education tuition issue that Representative Barrett raised as an example, I think what we've got is they've got a hammer that is taxes, and so everything looks like a nail, and they're missing that there's screws and staples and tape and glue and other ways of putting things together. They were looking broadly at a 1997 to mid-2010s time frame, and so I looked at Alaska, and what's the net migration there according to the state of Alaska? Because you have to remember, Alaska has no income tax, so they fit the Center of American Experiment's ideal, and in fact, Alaska pays you to live there. They not only don't have an income tax, they actually pay you out of their permanent fund to live there. Thousands of dollars a year per resident. And in more than half of the years over the last 14 or so, they had a net negative migration. And I would have liked the Center of the American Experiment to explain, if taxes are the thing that drive people to and from different states, when you've got a state that's paying people to come and live there, why are they seeing a net negative migration? It doesn't fit with their alleged correlation. I wish they'd stuck around, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Chair Dabney. And the Center of the American Experiment, I'm a little bit at fault here, but I'm not going to apologize, because they told us that they had to leave by whatever the time was, and so I should have announced that to the committee prior so that the committee knew that they're taking off. But they are around, and hopefully in the future here we'll get to them. I should have announced that they did have to go, not because they wanted to, because they really wanted to stay here with me, but that's the way it is. Okay, Chair Loon.
Mr. Chair, to that point that Representative
Barrett made. We don't do to that point, but I'll put you on the list. Chair Loon. And the reason I don't do that is because there's a lot of net points. We would never get to the point. Chair Loon, you're on the list, Chair. I don't have any bills before your committee, do I? I think I do before Chair Loon's. Chair Loon, you have as much time as you'd like.
Very wise, Mr. Chair. So two questions, and first for Mr. Michael, I was during Representative's last line of questioning in that he made a comment, and I wondered if you could put some information to help us have a frame of reference on with regards to, and I'm going to paraphrase, something about, you know, people being concerned about our taxes on rich people, high taxes on rich people. But actually, our tax rates, and it's been a little while since I looked at the rankings and that, but I think our tax rates on middle income tax filers in that in our state are actually relatively high as well. Could you validate what I just said, or is there information on that?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, I think it's fair to characterize Minnesota's individual income tax rates on, you know, sort of upper middle and middle income earners as being in the, you know, top quartile, top 10, something like that. We are, you know, sort of across the board a high income tax state. There's just, you know, sort of no getting around that. I don't have in my memory bank the exact rankings, you know, by incomes or something like that, but I think that's just a fair characterization of the situation.
Ms. Manzi, to Chair Loon's point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, if you asked me that question in my office, what I would do is look up a report that Mr. Haveman from the Center for Fiscal Excellence updates periodically that compares income tax burdens across the states for different filer types at different income ranges and does that kind of ranking. So I can find that one and the most recent one and send it to you.
Chair Loon.
Thank you. I would appreciate that because I've spent some time looking at it, but it's been a while. But I just do recall that, you know, our income tax rates, and we have the different categories, are actually, compared to most other states, are pretty high on middle-income earners here as well. So I didn't
Mr.
know.
Mr. Van Wyken, to that point?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy does a 50-state comparison, and they look at taxes, the major taxes, excise, sales, income, corporate, and individual property. And this is all taxes, not just income. And I believe Minnesota's ranking in the last study, which was based on 2014-2015 data, we were 20th in terms of the middle income, which they define as the middle quintile, the middle 20% of all taxpayers.
Thank you. Chair Loon?
Thank you. And if Mr. Van Wyken has that study or could just direct me to that, that would be great. One other question or comment, and if Mr. Van Wyken could put a little more information forward to the committee on this. You talked about changes perhaps in our per capita taxation rates and changes in that between, I think you said between 2002 and 2013. And use the word austere, which caught my attention. You know, during the interim, I was at something, some kind of an event, and happened to be chatting with someone from North Carolina, and we got into tax policy, which is weird at a cocktail party, but we did. And so we were kind of comparing, because he was involved in policy in his state, and we were comparing notes on that, and somehow we got around to our state budgets and the realization that our state budget, because they have, I think it was roughly the same population, is half as large as ours. And so could you, when you talked about our state budget and the austerity that you attributed to that time period, don't we, though, on average spend a lot more than a lot of other states per capita? So maybe that adjusted downward slightly during that time period, but we do spend a lot per capita compared to a lot of other states.
Mr. Van Wyken.
Mr. Chair, the Revenue Department routinely ranks states on per capita taxes and per capita spending. And on per capita, yes, Minnesota is fairly high. However, the Revenue Department found that almost always high per capita income states have high per capita spending and high per capita taxes. Their preferred method of ranking states is based on revenue and spending as a percentage of personal income, and there Minnesota is closer to the middle of the pack. We're about 20th. And this is, again, based on 2013 data. We're 20th in terms of revenue per capita and 25th to 30th in terms of expenditures as a percentage of personal income. I want to correct myself. We're 20th in terms of revenue as a percentage of personal income, 20th, 21st, and in the neighborhood of 25th to 30th in terms of expenditures as a percentage of personal income.
Chair Loan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I was in college a while back, I was a psychology major, and I had to take statistics, which I lovingly called sadistics. It was a struggle, but I got through it. And the professor marched to the front of the class the very first day of class and said, "You can make statistics sing any tune you want." So that's how I've looked at statistics, or sadistics, for quite a while. Anyway, I was proud to vote for the fourth tier tax because it made Minnesota's tax system more progressive. I used to have a little card from that radical organization, the Minnesota Management and Budget, and it showed the different tax rates for the different income levels, and it showed the people that made lots of money, not just upper middle class, but in the wealthy category, also paid a percentage of their income less than poorer people or middle class people. And I would show that to people, and they'd go, "You're kidding, I didn't know that. Oh, wow, that's, you know." So it really wasn't hard for me to vote for the fourth tier. I also found problems with the sample size, with the questioners, the various questioners, how they set up the data in the American experiment, or whatever it is, experiment for America or whatever. Anyway, my question is, if this is so dynamic, this study, which I think is really pretty biased, who's carrying the Republican bill to repeal the fourth tier? And question two, is there a bill to reduce the income tax rates, and who's carrying that?
Well, I carry a lot of bills, but we've had this discussion last year with my good friend, former Chair Lynn Chesky. She would ask that question, so it brought back some fond memories. The reason that bill is not being carried is because I don't feel like wasting anybody's time, including yours, Representative Slocum, because it's the governor's premier achievement, the fourth income tax tier. And so we could carry a bill and spend a whole lot of time on it, but, you know, it'd be kind of a waste of time because it's not going anywhere.
Well, Mr. Chair, it makes a statement.
Representative Slocum, I don't need to make another statement. I'm quite reserved and shy. So, Representative Slocum, you have the floor.
That's it. I'm done.
Okay. Thank you. You brought back such fond memories because, you know, Chair Lynn Chesky, I'll admit it, I miss her. I haven't talked about her because I get emotional.
And Mr. Chair, and you know that she and I shared a district. I was the A side, she was the B side.
Really?
Scary, huh?
I got a tremendous amount of respect for yes. Chair Lynn Chesky. Okay, Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't know you were so emotional. I will add, Mr. Chair, I did introduce a bill that will repeal the fourth tier, and actually be introduced today. It will repeal the entire income tax in Minnesota and replace it with a fair tax. So we are bringing Representative Slocum some ideas forward, and certainly the discussion is good, and certainly this discussion we're having with these folks and the ones before them I think is very salient. I have a question, I guess, first of all, for Mr. Van Wyken, and both you and Ms. Madden seem to not have a lot of faith in, and you pointed quite a bit to the Center for the American Experiment IRS data study, and seem to not trust that one. But then there's another one here by the Twin City Business Magazine, and they had 400 wealth managers, bankers, private equity firms, and others surveyed. 150 responded. About 252 clients per respondent were represented as they looked at the observations within their particular firm and where those folks went. I did the math. My little calculator worked. That's 37,800 potential people or observations amongst the respondents. What is your thought about this? They came forward with what appears to me to be very similar and almost parallel, certainly congruent observations in what they were saying, and that is that Minnesota tax policy is chasing people out of our state. And then I will, Mr. Chair, also mention, if you look at the Twin City Business Magazine handout here, there's four different sources. When you start to get four different points of data, and certainly Twin Cities Business Magazine actually shared some anecdotal data. I know I have observed the same in my district, which is not a rich district, but the rich people there are certainly leaving. But the data is piling up here very high, and for you to simply point at one piece of it or one of these studies and suggest that it's not very strong doesn't seem to hold water when we're seeing the same message over and over again. That's that Minnesotans are getting the heck out of here because we're taxing them too much. What say you?
Mr. Drazkowski, can you repeat the question?
No, Mr. Chair. Oh.
Ms. Madden.
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, I think the point that I wanted to make is I think the IRS data does give us solid information about people changing their mailing address and some information about those households that move. My question really is with then can you take the steps to say, one, there's a total dollar figure of income leaving the state that we can calculate off of that data, and do we know that taxes are the reason why? I have not had a chance to read closely the Twin Cities Business Magazine articles, which I will, but I have not, so I don't want to speak to that. I guess the point I would make is that is a point of view that we should hear, but there are also other people who are not leaving the state, and that perspective should be heard also. So I think that's the point I would make.
Chair Drazkowski.
I'm wondering if Mr. Van Wyken has any
Mr. Van Wyken.
Mr. Chair.
Apart from the Center for American Experiment report, the only report that I've only seen in passing a couple of days ago was the from the Twin Cities Business. And I think, Mr. Chair, I made my comments earlier, and that was basically it was not a random survey.
Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Van Wyken and Ms. Madden, four different data points here, four different surveys coming up with the same data, and I can understand maybe questioning methodologies in one or another and seeing that, but over and again, they're saying that, we're chasing the wealthy people who are paying the bulk of the taxes out of the state, and we're attracting people who are coming here for our generous and numerous benefits that we're offering to people. And more succinctly, Mr. Chair, we're exporting wealth and importing poverty. That's not a sustainable behavior. And I'm troubled by that. I would hope that everybody in this room is, and we've got to start to become more competitive again, or, every Minnesota resident is going to end up in Florida talking to Governor Scott, where he welcomes us and thanks us for being released from our government here and coming there. So that's not what we want, Mr. Chair, members, and I appreciate your indulgence, but we can't poo-poo this. I have seen in my district and throughout Minnesota and talked to people. I begged them to stay, and they just can't stay anymore because we are treating them like the deer during deer hunting season when you're hunting, Mr. Chair. They run to the woods where there's no hunters because that's where they're safe. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we will be going in a second here to Commissioner Bauer. I've got a whole long list here yet that we're going to have to wait for another time. But, members, I've said many times that tax policy does affect behavior. It does affect behavior. And if you look at not just on a state-to-state basis, and I know we're state legislators, but I read a report the other day that in 2015 there was a record number of depatriations. So it's not just leaving Minnesota for Texas or Florida. It's Americans leaving for other countries. And the reason was because the tax is a record number of depatriation. So these people, I've said many times, and I'll hear about on emails, these people are rich. They're not stupid. And so they're going to go, I mean, let's say somebody made $3 million a year. I'm not talking about me. I'm that'd be lower income. But let's say make $3 million a year just by one simple move to Florida or Texas. You didn't do anything. You just moved. $300,000 a year just for fun. You know, $300,000 here, $300,000 there. Pretty soon you're talking $600,000. I was invited recently to talk to the Florida Club. They wanted to ship me down to Florida to give a speech to this huge group, and it's all former Minnesotans. I didn't know there was such a thing. St. Cloud and Phoenix, they want me to go speak to a Florida group of Minnesotans that are not Minnesotans anymore. So tax policy does affect behavior. I had a meeting the other day. I don't know how it slipped through Ethan here because it was a mayor. I meet with all mayors from my district. This guy was from Breckenridge. He doesn't know my district that well yet. But the mayor from Breckenridge came in and said, okay, here we go, Flaherty and Hood. You know, got to have more LGA. Cry, cry, cry. Okay, so that's what I thought the meeting was going to be about, right? You know what the meeting was about? He had one issue. And it was, and it kind of threw me off here. I was very interested in what he had to say. His biggest issue in Breckenridge, the mayor of Breckenridge, was the estate, was the Earhart bill. You had someone lobbying Representative Earhart on your bill for the estate tax, to your provision of the estate tax, because they're losing tons of folks. They're losing their wealthy folks to Wahpeton. Is that North or South Dakota? North Dakota? Yeah, and I thought that was very interesting. I thought, oh, here we go, 15 minutes of LGA. But he was interested in the Earhart provision. So I thought that was interesting. Now we're going to go to our good friend of the committee, Commissioner Bowerly, with a few comments, and then we will be out of here on time. I almost said I apologize that there's no public testimony today, but I'm not going to apologize. So with that, Commissioner Bowerly, welcome to the committee for your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members. Nice to be with you again. I appreciate the opportunity to provide some comments on the center's report, and that will be the focus of my comments, but I also, if you'd like to, can address Mr. Kirshner's report as well. You might have noticed, if you read the whole article, that I did have a chance to talk to him as he was writing that as well. First, since this bill starts with the tax bill of 2013, I want to ensure we all have the appropriate context. That bill raised taxes on the amount of income over $150,000 if single, or $250,000 if married filing jointly earned by Minnesotans. It raised it from 7.85 to 9.85 on that amount of income over those two thresholds. Minnesota has not changed its income tax rates on 98% of Minnesotans for the last 15 years. The effect of the 2013 bill was to restore Minnesota's budget stability. It replenished our reserves, improved our credit rating, and provided needed resources to make investments in education, both in higher and K-12, human services, and other essential services to Minnesotans. With that context, I'd like to turn to the report. I'll start by noting that I agree with the center when it states in its report on page 15 that the decision to move for most is complex. There are a number of factors, and this committee has identified a variety of them this morning, from market losses in 2008, which might have affected income that's tracked in the charts, weather, whether you want to call that climate change or people moving to change their own climates, technology, healthcare, we have a great healthcare system in Minnesota, family, the aging of the boomer generation, which of course as one detaches from the workforce allows for more flexibility on where one spends their time, and of course our education system. I disagree with the report's conclusion, however, that you can look at this migration data and draw a causal relationship between the tax changes in Minnesota starting in 2013. It is important to understand that the IRS data used in the study does not provide any basis to include why the people identified in the study chose to move, because it does not contain data on people's motivation for moving. Similarly, as Ms. Madden pointed out this morning, this data doesn't account for the fact that income of the job stays here in Minnesota. So the dollar amount associated with the quote-unquote loss is actually not lost. When someone replaces someone who's left, that income, of course, stays in Minnesota in that case. And I think looking at migration as the demographer often does is really important to this perspective. Minnesota has experienced decades of continuous net in-migration from international arrivals, as the state demographer reported last year. And we have reported net losses from state-to-state migration since 2001. Studies done after tax increases on other states, particularly in Maryland and New Jersey, have shown that the increase in the top rate did not affect how many high-income earners moved out of that state. And as an example already raised by Representative Lesch, when Minnesota cut taxes dramatically in 99 through 2000, after that, in 2001, we gained 27% fewer people than in the previous year. So again, when Minnesota cut taxes, we gained fewer people than in the prior year. And according to the same data that the center uses in its report, only 2 of 9 states that recently enacted significant tax cuts had more income move into those states than in 2013 to 2014. So, Mr. Chair and members, what's really important to remember here is the tax data can only tell us so much. And nonetheless, the center's study suggests that cutting rates would encourage more people to come to Minnesota. There are studies, including census studies, that ask the actual people moving who have moved why they made that move. People report many different reasons, but the most frequent are for a job, to be closer to family, and housing. There are many other factors as well, and certainly taxes are among those factors for some people. But taxes are not the primary cause of migration in the United States or in Minnesota. Many migration patterns have been in place for a long time, and they persist regardless of changes in state tax policy. And again, it's important to remember that only the wealthiest 2% of Minnesotans saw an increase in their tax rates in 2013. Minnesota has not changed tax rates on 98% of Minnesotans in 15 years. If taxes alone were driving force for migration, it stands to reason that only people in the top bracket would be leaving. Instead, what we see are migrations across incomes and age groups. The demographer's report from last year shows largest numbers of movers in age brackets in early 20s and 30s. And it should be noted that families earning $75,000 to $125,000 in Minnesota are taxed at about the same rates as those in Idaho, Arkansas, and South Carolina, three states that have gained from net migration, according to the IRS. So why people move or leave Minnesota, they do for complex reasons, and they'll vary personal by person and situation. And I do not dispute that for some, taxes are a reason. I hear that when I talk to Minnesotans as well. As a person of revenue, I often get to talk about taxes at social gatherings. It just comes up when people ask me what I do for a living. But unfortunately, the IRS data just does not support the broad conclusion that reducing the bracket will result in migration to Minnesota. Ultimately, the research on why people move shows they move between states for a variety of reasons: job, education, housing, community, and for all of the reasons members have already identified this morning. Few people make a decision as important as moving their family based on taxes alone. And I'm sure the committee knows there are great reasons to live in Minnesota. Median income is high here, and it has increased every year from 2011 to 2014. In fact, Minnesota leads the nation in median income growth, so we are a high median income state. Forbes ranks Minnesota first in quality of life. CNBC ranked Minnesota number one state for business, focusing on the great workforce that we have here, which of course requires a great education system to build that workforce. AARP named Minnesota as the best state in long-term services and supports for older adults. And with the aging boomer generation, this is going to become more important for citizens in Minnesota. And the list goes on. And Minnesota ranks highly on these national lists because we invest in our people and our communities. And closer to home, our regional economic development partnership called Greater MSP touts the great reasons to live in Minnesota, including the low cost of living, our great healthcare system, which even after people move back, I hear of people moving back to Minnesota once they have some medical issues and need access to great medical care, ample sports, recreation, parks, lakes, arts and culture options. If we reduce investments, we will risk what makes Minnesota attractive. We are working to build an economy that works for everyone, not just the wealthy few. We have more to do. Many in Minnesota are facing severe economic disparities across the state. We have too many children living in poverty in Minnesota, and we must do more to to build an education system to prepare our workforce for the future, to keep our businesses thriving who need that workforce. And we must invest in infrastructure from transit to roads to broadband across Minnesota. And if we do these things, we can continue to make Minnesota a great place to live and do business. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity. I appreciate the time. I know it's short, but I'd be happy to take any questions if there's time.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Barley, and you are certainly welcome to this committee anytime, and your department is anytime that we're meeting. Your comments on income tax rates on only the top 2% are exactly correct. They have not changed for 15 years, but I read one report, and I'd like to visit with you further, that over half of the tax increases from the 2013 tax bill were on the poor and middle class. Cigarette tax, I mean, all the other taxes. So your comments are exactly correct on the income tax, but we'll look at some other things there. Members, we're going to be wrapping it up here pretty quick. Look for next week's agendas. Mr. Rubis will be getting those out to you. I do want to point out again that we will not be moving today's minutes on Tuesday. We won't be able to do that. The Golf Industry Day on the Hills in 400 North, that's where I'm headed next. I want to thank members of this committee for a very, very respectful debate. The issues we talked about today can kind of get both sides going on, if you know what I mean. So I thank you for the very respectful debate today. With that, since there's nothing else for the good of the order at this time, good government all the time, we are adjourned.